Random House Audio presents 100 Victories, Special Ops and the Future of American Warfare by Linda Robinson. Read for you by Kirsten Potter. To win 100 victories in 100 battles is not the acme of skill. To subdue the enemy without fighting is the acme of skill. Sun Tzu. Introduction. You'll have to kill a lot of men like my father. Chris Haas was one of the first Americans to arrive in Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks on New York and Washington. A shaved, bald Special Forces officer with a hoarse voice and a love of cigars, Haas is easygoing but essentially private, careful, and skeptical while maintaining an outward affability. He bowed his head before each meal, but did not speak of religion. His reserve contrasted with the effusive warmth of his Texan wife, Betty, whose smiling picture he tacked to the bulletin board by his desk. Haas flew in on October 26, 2001, on one of the first helicopters that made it over the Hindu Kush following 9/11. At the time, he was a lieutenant colonel, and he would be in command of the first four Special Forces teams to soldier through the winter weather and link up with Northern Alliance militia leaders. He would work side by side with CIA veterans of the Afghan-Soviet War of the 1980s, who would reforge their ties with the Northern Alliance, dispensing suitcases of cash for Afghan salaries, equipment, and fuel. The three who arrived first were agency pros and a pleasure to work with, qualities not shared by some of the whippersnappers the CIA would later send out. They included Doc, who had been a Special Forces medic before joining the CIA, Gary Schroen, a former field officer, and Gary Burnson, a former CIA station chief. Haas's most important duty was serving as liaison to the Northern Alliance leadership, the Tajik-led militia that had been fighting the Taliban for years and was the only armed group with the ability to topple the regime and oust its al-Qaeda allies. The G-chief, or guerrilla leader, was Bismullah Khan Mohammadi, a wily, determined Northern Alliance leader who was highly beholden to his Tajik faction, the second largest of the groups making up Afghanistan's ethnic mosaic. As he grilled Haas in his headquarters at Jabal Saraj, he sought to put his would-be patron on the defensive. "Are you ready to lose men? There will be fighting," he said to Haas and his operations officer, Mark Schwartz. "Is the United States going to abandon us again?" he continued, referring to the abrupt end of America's interest in Afghanistan after the Soviet departure in 1989. Haas knew it was a test. Bismullah Khan, or BK, as he would come to be known in the years ahead, when he went on to become Afghanistan's Army Chief of Staff, Interior Minister, and then Defense Minister, was trying to level the playing field. The Northern Alliance certainly wanted American help, and it desperately needed the firepower that Haas had at his disposal. But BK wanted to stay in the driver's seat. The Northern Alliance wanted American help in order to throw out the Taliban and take control of the country. From his training, Haas knew that managing this relationship was crucial. He could not change BK or his group's objectives, but he could not become captive to them either. Over the weeks and months ahead, he and BK became friendly, but Haas never gave in. Haas would call him on that righteous talk, Schwartz later recalled. He would talk to him straight. The basic objective, toppling the Taliban and getting Osama bin Laden, was clear, but the details were complex. Haas was to strengthen the Northern Alliance militia while simultaneously restraining it from sweeping south to capture Kabul, Afghanistan's capital, and wreaking vengeance on the Pashtuns, who formed the largest of Afghanistan's ethnic groups. He was to stall the alliance until a multi-ethnic, power-sharing agreement had been forged in Bonn and a leader had been chosen. Meanwhile, he was to keep tabs on feuds among the various militia leaders of the north, as well as among the Pashtun factions jockeying for control over Kandahar, the second largest city in the country after Kabul. During his eventful first tour in Afghanistan, Haas experienced firsthand the difficulties and limitations of warfare with guerrilla allies, first in the drive to capture Kabul, which was complete by November 2001, and then in the December pursuit of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda fighters as they fled into the Tora Bora mountain stronghold, bound for Pakistan. At Tora Bora, special operations teams joined up with Pashtuns from eastern Afghanistan who proved dubious allies, as some of them sold safe passage or turned a blind eye as al-Qaeda slipped through the 14,000-foot peaks and across the border. Next, Haas received a stark and lethal lesson in the fog of war as he led the main attack against the al-Qaeda remnants in Operation Anaconda in March 2002, when his teams trained and led Zia Loden's Pashtun force into what became a bloody battle. The battle, which took place following a 3-week course of instruction to instill some basic discipline and infantry tactics into the motley band, was complicated by overturned trucks, a collapsed bridge, lack of promised U.S. air support, and precisely ranged mortar, artillery, and machine gun fire from al-Qaeda fighters dug into the mountains. Zia's forces suffered a 14% casualty rate, including a friendly fire attack from an AC-130 Spectre gunship that also killed U.S. Army Chief Warrant Officer Stanley Harriman. One loss particularly stung Haas and reinforced the treacherous nature of guerrilla politics. Just east of the Anaconda battleground lay the Coast Gardez Pass, a key mountain pass to the eastern border region. It was guarded by a notorious Pashtun strongman named Pacha Khan Zadran. A young Special Forces soldier named Nate Chapman was killed by his militia, and Haas never forgot what one of Pacha Khan Zadran's sons, who served as an interpreter for U.S. forces, later told him. "You'll have to kill a lot of men like my father before Afghanistan will change." Afghanistan was in the throes of a cultural and generational transition that would go on for many more years. Strong men would continue to hold sway, and assassination would remain a common method of settling political disputes. Ethnic factions and Cold War-era alliances led by septuagenarians trumped many of the wishes and aspirations of younger, more educated Afghans. The 12 years after 2001 did see enormous progress, as well as a tremendous amount of killing, but the overall character of Afghan politics remained stubbornly feudal. The rule of the fist, the Tajik-Pashtun divide, and the grip of the few over the many would change only slowly, as the old men and the old ways passed from the scene. Pacha Khan Zadran became a member of the Afghan parliament, but he remained the strongman of the Coast Gardez Pass. Missed opportunities. Special Operations Forces achieved an amazing feat, toppling the Taliban with about 350 operators, a handful of CIA operatives, and Afghan militias. They justly received kudos for this unalloyed success. They had had to improvise after 9/11 and overcome Afghanistan's ferocious obstacles, including terrain, weather, and internecine political machinations. But the Special Operations Forces also missed a huge opportunity in this period, and it was not the failure to catch bin Laden at Tora Bora. Once he had retreated to his mountain lair, it was highly unlikely he could have been found without reliable Afghan partners. No American troops knew their way through the labyrinthine mountain passes, and none were acclimated for trekking and engaging in battle at 14,000-foot altitudes. The real opportunity missed was the chance for special operators, those first in, to define a game plan, a way ahead that would envision a conclusive endgame to the Afghan conflict. Time and again, the United States has mistaken the decapitation of a regime or a terrorist network as a victory, a tactical triumph as the decisive point after which only mopping up remains. Especially in the case of Afghanistan, where the complex political and physical terrain created many possibilities for a rural insurgency, allowing it to survive, thrive, and come back to fight another day, the capture of the cities and the installation of the new government of Hamid Karzai did not constitute a sufficient conclusion to the problem. Special Operations Forces were in the lead initially, but they did not capitalize on this moment to design a plan to put Afghanistan definitively on the road to stability. True, the diplomats of the United Nations, the United States, and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, We're all meeting in Bonn to divvy up responsibilities for police, army, counter-narcotics, and demobilization.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?